It is Locked On Jazz for the 18th of March. Jazz take care of business. The defense was fabulous. We'll take a look at that. Look at the NBA playoff picture where two buzzer beaters secure a spot in the playoff seeding and get ready for Bradley Beal and the Washington Wizards. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, it's Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers. Hope you enjoy the show. I am the radio voice of the team, Jazz NBA insider, and this is available for you on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as telling your smart device when you get in the car, play podcast Locked On Jazz. In fact, I just went on a nice walk this morning around the nation's capital. I went and saw the Vietnam Memorial and the Lincoln and Washington, walked them all a little bit. And on my walk, I said, okay, Google, play podcast Locked On Wizards. It's all it takes, but I'm a Google guy. Today's show is brought to you by Slow the Flow, Iron Gate Global Advisors, and Homie. All right, let's start with the playoff picture and review the weekend, then go to the Jazz and how they're playing and some good signs going on with them. And then let's look at Bradley Beal and the awesomeness that we confront tonight. So the Denver Nuggets have pulled off back-to-back buzzer beaters in 80% win games. Over Dallas and over Indiana, they won at the buzzer on both. And that, to me, may have secured their spot as the number two seed. We thought they would be the number two seed the whole time. They just had to do what they were supposed to do. They did it. They just did it in dramatic fashion with an ejection and everything. But I think, and we'll look at 538, and we'll look at Basketball Reference, and we'll look at ESPN before we're done today. But just those two were big that, you know, there's not a lot left here. They just had to make sure they didn't drop games they weren't supposed to. They have four or five really tough games the rest of the way that they will drop. So I guess in theory, Houston could just not lose again. And the way they're playing, that's possible. But it just felt like those were really mammoth for Denver to hold on. Oklahoma City did the opposite. Oklahoma City went and dropped two 50-50 games, one against Indiana and a 44% against Golden State where they got blown out. And now you begin to wonder a little bit. They have two very winnable games this week against Miami and Toronto. They're both heavily favored in both of them. It'll be curious to see. Those, to me, are the big ones for Oklahoma City. Portland beat the Pelicans, lost to the Spurs, which both were pick'em games, and then lost C.J. McCollum for at least a week, which will be interesting to see the impact on them. Without C.J. McCollum, if he were to miss just the week, they play a 70% win game against the Pacers, an 80% win game against the Mavericks, and a 76% win game against the Pistons. There's a decent chance they're going to be just fine, and it won't impact their win-loss. A 75% win against the Bulls after that. So their next five, actually, are really pretty basic games. They probably can win all of those without C.J. McCollum. And then this injury doesn't have a big impact. Obviously, if they lose him, it'd be surprising. Houston, after losing to the Warriors, went and beat the Suns like they're supposed to. The Jazz took care of the 72% win Timberwolves and the 86% win Nets. I think Timberwolves on Thursday. San Antonio just is not losing basketball games. San Antonio's run here is incredible. They won a 67% game with a win probability against Detroit, 44% against the Thunder, 47% against the Nuggets, 63% against the Hawks, 42% against the Bucks, 46% against the Mavericks, 90% against the Knicks, and then a back-to-back 53% against the Blazers. They play the Warriors next, then Miami and Houston and Boston. So they have some losses that should pile up here finally for them. If they don't coming up here, it's really something for them. It's funny, last night I was like, I don't know how they're winning. And I was around a coach who's like, you mean other than their two All-Stars? And I was like, okay, that's a decent point. I don't know if I think DeMar DeRozan's really an All-Star, but that is true that they have two All-Stars. The Clippers beat the Bulls and then held on to beat the Nets last night on a Lou Williams buzzer beater. So they're not blinking at all either. The Clippers, those were both 79-win probability games. And here's how it's all playing out. It's interesting, exactly kind of as we thought. So we broke this down at All-Star break and put the games into five categories. Certain wins were 80 to 100%. Should wins were 60 to 80. Pick'em games were 40 to 60. Unlikely's 20 to 40, and no chances were 0 to 20. And as I told you, we generally slightly kind of outperform the numbers, except for pick'ems are about the same, and unlikely's actually get close to 50-50. So far in the certain wins, teams are 16 and 2. Denver dropped one, and Oklahoma City dropped one. We've taken the Lakers out at this point. Should wins were 19 and 10 so far this year. And, you know, it's a little under 67% win probability, which was kind of exactly as what we anticipated it would be. I actually think that'll get up to 70% win probability. Most teams will win those. Pick'ems so far are at 14 and 14. Unlikelies are the surprise. They're at 10 and 8. So teams are outperforming those games, and no chances are 2 and 7. The rest of the way, let's look at the Clippers and the Spurs, who are sitting right with the Jazz right now. The Clippers have one certain game left, three should games left, five pick'ems left, one unlikely, and one no-chancer. So if I were to guess from that, and this is just a guess, they win their certain. I'm going to say they win all their should wins. That's four. Of their pick'ems, they win three. That's seven. And we'll call it that. So I think the Clippers will end at 48 wins, would be my guess on the Clips at this point. San Antonio, how do you possibly guess? But San Antonio has three certain wins left, three should wins left, one pick'em, three unlikelies, and two uncertains, or no chancers. So they're going to win their three certains. They're going to win two of their should wins. That's five. They'll win their pick'em. That's six. And they'll win one of the either unlikely or no chances. So that's seven for San Antonio. So the Spurs go to 48. The Jazz have left six certain wins, five should wins, and two pick'ems. Let's give us the certain wins, all six of them. We'll take four of the should wins. We have not done that yet, but let's hope we do. We're 3-2 in those instead. So six plus four is 10. We get one of our pick'ems. That's 11 wins the rest of the way. That has us only losing one or two more games the rest of the way. And that would get us to 51. That would get us close to home court if we do that. It's about what it's going to take. Oklahoma City gets interesting. They're 42 and 28. OKC has five certain wins left. They have three should wins. They're 1-3 in these games. Of their pick'em games, they have two left. They're 1-3 so far in their pick'em games. And their unlikelies, they're 1-1. So let's assume OKC wins all five of their certain wins. Of their remaining three should wins, we'll give them two. That's seven. Of the remaining pick'ems, let's say they're slumping, we'll give them one. That's eight. And they don't get any of their unlikelies. That gets them at 50. And that's how the Jazz get ahead of Oklahoma City in the standings. That's the script right there. The Jazz end up losing two more games the rest of the way and finish 51-31. And the Thunder blink just enough. Portland, without CJ McCollum, it's interesting. They only have one certain win left, but they have seven should-win games left. Two pick'ems, three unlikelies. So they get their certain win. Of their seven remaining should wins, let's give them six. Or with a C.J. McCollum injury, we can back them down to five. Let's take it five, so that's six wins. They'll split their pick'ems, that's six. They'll get one of their unlikely, that's seven for them the rest of the way. And that gets them only at 49. That seems low. Here's what 538, let's run through the various projection systems. 538's NCAA stuff is just great, by the way. Here's what 538 has projected out right now. Warriors at 59 wins, Nuggets at 54, and the Rockets at 52. Feels like that's Trailblazers 50, Jazz 50, Thunder 50, Clippers and Spurs at 47. I had them at 48. So I have everybody, and that's our model, I have everybody out projecting the models. I think that's what happens this time of year, is these models are based on same, turns out a little different. Oh, in the East, Basketball Reference has Warriors, Nuggets ahead of the Rockets by three. Rockets with 51, Blazers with 50, Jazz with 49, Oklahoma City with 49. We'd lose that tiebreaker. And then San Antonio and the Clippers at 47. ESPN and their BPI system at this point has Golden State 1, Denver 2, Houston 3, Portland at 40, Utah at 49, Oklahoma City at 49, San Antonio now at 48, and the Clippers at 47. Not a lot of room for the Jazz to wiggle here. 61% win probability against the Wizards, 85% against the Knicks, 71% against the Hawks, 75% against the Bulls. And these teams are playing all right. That was when, I don't know what they are actually now. That's when we put them out. Right now, they've upped the Jazz win probability to 65% over the Nuggets tonight. Excuse me, over the Wizards tonight. Against the Knicks on Wednesday, it's 85% now. Back-to-back against the Hawks, 68%. And then Saturday against the Bulls, who are playing pretty well, it's 74%. All right, let's see what we can do on this trip. That's where we sit. Today's show is brought to you by Homey. They are revolutionizing the way real estate is done. The old model of real estate is that you sit there and you pay based on the price of your housing, of your house. So it doesn't, to me, make a lot of sense. Like if I did a good job investing and selling it, why actually, if my house is nice, which should be easier for the agent, are you actually paying them more money than if the house is not as nice and actually needs to sell it? Like, it doesn't totally make sense. So what Homey has done is you now pay $1,500 flat fee to list your home and close it. That's it. $1,500. If your house is worth $200,000, $500,000, $800,000, $1,500,000, $1,500. Text LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. LOCK to 88588. Does Homey work? They're selling faster than the market, and they're selling for more than the market. So that would say that the Homey team works as well. So find out for yourself. Find out more by reaching out to Homey. And call or text LOCK, LOCKE, to 88588. That's 88588. Water is seemingly in abundance when you look at all the snow and the mountains, but the truth of the matter is we always have to be careful because we live in a desert. So whether or not it's a streaky season of water and big snowfall or whether or not it's a drought, we have to be super careful as Utahns on what we do and how we preserve our water. So that, my friends, is why it's time to slow the flow and become a slow the flow WER water efficiency all-star. Kenny Frisch told me in an email that one of the best programs out there offered at Slow the Flow is you can schedule a free water check where a trained technician will come to your house and provide a customized irrigation system based on your sprinkler assistant efficiency. It's a great way to save hundreds, if not thousands, of gallons of water each year and maximize your water receives. And it's free. I didn't know this. It's at slowtheflow.org/RUWaterWise, hashtag schedule. Check it out. That's all at slowtheflow.org. Save H2O. Thanks so much, by the way, for sharing your Slow the Flow stories and being like Kenny Frisch and helping me out. It takes a community, and we're doing a great job with it. Slow the Flow. I did it today. Told my little, set a little timer when I jumped in the shower after my walk to make sure I did not get caught, carried away, and take too long in the shower. It's slowtheflow.org. All right, so the Jazz are playing really well defensively right now. That's what jumps out. The Jazz have now swung together a stretch of, I believe, it is now 8 of the last 11 games. I'll check it and make sure. It is now 7 of the last 10 games that they have held an opponent under a point of possession. This is when we get great. Is when the defense clicks in on this level. Rudy Gobert dominated Jared Allen and the Brooklyn Nets the other night in just an outrageous fashion. They had 12 shots in the rim at the rim through three quarters. They just simply wouldn't attack. What's interesting about Rudy, and I talked about this on Locked On NBA today with Josh Lloyd on the local experts on the biggest stories, is that Rudy impacts the guards more than he off the big men. Like, it's easy to say, oh, the big man scored on Rudy. Yeah, he's probably the only one out there that can. But it's the guards that now can't get to the basket. The guards who suddenly, instead of getting 4 shots a night at the rim, suddenly are getting 2 shots or 1 shot a night at the rim. We'll talk about it coming up with Bradley Beal here in a second. Because it's how it's going to impact his game a great deal as well, as you is how, you know, where he can get his shots. But the Jazz defense in the last 4 games, 97, 98, 99, 95. So defensively, the Jazz have absolutely stymied people. It's back to kind of high level defense for the Jazz. The bummer is, frankly, the defensive key for the Utah Jazz is Dante Exum. And it certainly sounds as though we are not seeing him again this year. I don't know that for a fact. No one said that. But just if you read patella tendon injuries, and hopefully he doesn't have to have surgery, we'll see over time on that. But that is an injury that is hard to come back from, takes a long time. But if we play James Harden or Damian Lillard or, you know, Russell Westbrook, which is the 3 choices we seem to have right now, those are all games where Dante's super important. Royce O'Neal is a great defensive player. If he has a weakness, when he has to defend out at 30 feet, he's not as strong. What's interesting about trying to figure out who the Jazz want to play is Ricky Rubio plays so much better against Oklahoma City than he does against Portland. And it has to do with the defensive style that both the teams play. Portland drops the big, forces Ricky to become a shooter and to make plays offensively without passing. And Oklahoma City rushes 2 guys at him and forces him into a passer and lets him use his best skills. They actually turn him into a better player, so that he's thus better against them than he is against Portland. It's why he was so vital in the game that we missed. But when you need Ricky to make a bunch of shots, I mean, he missed 15 straight non-restricted area twos the other day throughout a few days. That's not his forte. Back to the Jazz defense for a second. Brooklyn the other night ended up only taking 20 shots at the rim. Our last 4 opponents, in fact, this is almost probably worth me digging into a little bit. Our last 4 opponents have not taken have not gotten to 30 shots at the rim. And in fact, if you go back to the Dallas game, or since the All-Star break, Oklahoma City got 49 in the double overtime. Dallas got 15. Clippers got 22. Milwaukee got 25. Pelicans got 27. The Pelicans and the Grizzlies got up over 30 in their two games. So did Denver. Then the Thunder got 22. The Suns got 28. The Timberwolves got 27. And Brooklyn got 20. The key here is since we don't allow a lot of threes, in fact, we allow the fewest threes in the league, that when you suddenly take away the rim, Brooklyn took 39 mid-range shots. Minnesota took 40. Phoenix took 35. Oklahoma City took 35. Memphis took 31. New Orleans in the loss only took 29. No, that's in the win. They took 49 in the win against us. Milwaukee took 32. These are astronomically high numbers of mid-range shots. Contrasted to the Jazz, who took a lot against Brooklyn, but prior to that, 14 against Minnesota, 15 against Phoenix, 14 against Oklahoma City, 10 against Memphis. Like, the Jazz are doing is distorting teams' shot charts right now in because of Rudy and their defense at a really high level, and it gives you a tremendous edge statistically in that game. The other one that's going on is that Derek Favors is killing backups right now. Killing backups. You know, he went up against Ed Davis the other night and made Ed Davis look really, really as though he just was average. And he's a pretty darn good player, right? He's a guy who is, Ed Davis is like one of the great offensive rebounders we've had in this league. And Derek just annihilated him. Like it was embarrassing what Derek did to him. And Derek's just been doing that night in and night out. Here's a big quantum change to who the Jazz are this year. And that is what the Jazz are when Derek's on the floor and Rudy Gobert is off the floor. Now, in the past years, one of the things that I would point out all the time is that we actually weren't very good defensively when that was taking place. So, when Derek was on the floor and Rudy was off the floor, we would be average to below average defensively. And in turn, you know, you like I heard all the stuff about, well, we have the best backup center in the league, and I generally kind of believed it, but statistically I couldn't really back it up. Now this year it's a little different. Our defensive rating in 932 minutes with Gobert off the floor is a 100.5. That would make us the number one defense in the NBA. The number one defense in the NBA right now is the Milwaukee Bucks at 104.7. With Gobert on the floor and Favors on the floor, it's a 98.3. Now, we have a hard time scoring, and we actually have a hard time scoring when just Derek is on without Rudy. But our defensive numbers are amazing. So what you now have is when Favors and Gobert are on the floor together, the defensive rating is a 98.3. When Derek is on the floor without Rudy, usually against backups, right? Quinn does a really good job of that. The Jazz defensive rating is 100.5. And when Rudy is on without Derek, the defensive rating is actually a 103.1 right now, but usually against starters. By the way, if you want the numbers here, we're plus 6.1 when Rudy is on the floor without Derek. So Rudy with a stretch four, we're plus 6.1. Favors and Gobert were plus 1.4, and Favors by himself were plus 2.9. If you really want to dig into the math on that and try to figure out what it really means, the question is, if Gobert were to play all of his 36 minutes as a stretch with a stretched lineup and maintain the pace of plus 6.1, how much better would the team be? That's the big offseason math question you have to do. I haven't done it yet. So as great, and the question is, if you have favors, you have to play Derek as a starter, and you have to play him for at least 12 minutes. You can't pay him what you're paying him without him playing at least 12 minutes with Rudy. That's our worst plus-minus lineup. If those 12 minutes were actually to be Rudy by himself, how much better would we get? And then you now don't have favors in this scenario. So you don't have the plus 2.9 without Derek with as a backup center. What do you have to have then in your backup center minutes to cover for the loss of Derek's complete and utter dominance against second team centers? That's in those 16 minutes a night, probably less, 14 minutes a night of backup center play. It's an interesting equation. And then obviously if there's ever an injury, you have a different thing. We'll look at Bradley Beal when we continue. But first, let me have Spencer Nelson join us to tell us a little bit about Iron Gate Global Advisors. I'd like to introduce you to Iron Gate Global Advisors, financial group out of Salt Lake City. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, great basketball player. And beyond his jump shot, he's got an MBA. He's worked in private equity. He's got experience working in Wall Street, accounting and financing degrees. And he's now working with Iron Gate Financial. And here's why.
As I evaluated my options and looked at different firms, it became clear to me that the real question I needed to ask was, who would I trust managing my portfolio? And as I got to know Brett and I got to know Brian, I was able to see how they differentiate themselves from so many other wealth management firms and the real value that they create. And it was clear to me that I wanted to work with them.
Brian's a long-term financial expert. Brett, who's been in the business forever, has got an options background. They have a strategy, a direction, and a process. And most importantly, as a small firm, they understand your journey. If you'd like to find out more about Iron Gate, give Spencer a call at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334 or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. The big task at hand tonight is Bradley Beal. He is just tremendous. He has scored 40 points in back-to-back games. And that's where your game plan starts and finishes. Let's take a look at Bradley Beal in some different manners and ways today as a player. First of all, what I always look at is, where does he get his shots? Because this is where Gobert screws things up. So Beal is getting about 3.6, four shots a night at the rim. League average is 1.9. So Bradley Beal gets four shots a night at the rim. And that's where he gets five of his points a game. Does he get those tonight? He shoots about 70% at the rim. Pretty impressive. He takes another 4.5 shots a game in the paint. So he's going to take eight shots tonight in the paint. Usually four in the restricted area, four in the floater zone. He shoots 56.7% in the floater zone, which is crazy high. Let's see if he gets those same shots tonight. We'll be charting it on the radio broadcast. You can join us on the drive home at 5 o'clock tonight. Mid-range usually takes about 4.5 shots. He shoots 42%. He gets a corner three at 40%. He takes six above the break threes at 35%. Does he have a preference of which side of the floor? He is much better. Well, he's a little bit better on the threes. He's considerably better on the left side of the floor. In the mid-range, but his left side catch and shoot is pretty special. And he's just a little bit of a better player on the left side of the floor. He takes incredibly equally distributed shots. He's a little favors the left, but his mid-range game is exactly the same on each side. It's stunningly equally distributed. It's like you don't actually see that very often. If you're defending Bradley Beal, easier said than done. I mean, the guy is just on a different planet right now. With what he's doing. He had 40 on 12 of 17 shooting against Memphis, hit 9 threes. The night before, he had 40 on 7 of 13 shooting. He's 16 of his last 25 from 3. He has also played 45 minutes against Charlotte and 39 against Memphis and 39 against Orlando the game before that. And 38 before that and 45 before that and 41 before that. So he is playing a lot of minutes. He had a bad game against Charlotte where he went 4 of 21. But they are rolling him out there right now. And he is assisting, and he's doing it all. Catch and shoot, he's 38%. He gets 4.5 a game. Off the bounce threes, he's 35%. Not a huge difference. But you'd like to take away that catch, left side of the floor, catch and shoot game from him if you can. The other aspect is, as we talked about, this is just what Rudy does, is whether or not he just doesn't get to the rim the way he usually does. And if you take that away, it changes him a little bit. He is in the 88th percentile on spot-ups. He is pretty darn good on the pick and roll. He's not, you know, his better is getting off somebody else's action, but that's not there for him right now. He's surprisingly good in isolation. He really is, he's just an all-around fabulous player. In isolation, he drives left the same amount as he drives right, and he converts at the exact same rate either way. I mean, literally 71 drives left, 60 drives right, 51% shooting versus 50% shooting. His scoring percentage is 46.7% on both. On the pick and roll, you have no choice but to go over the pick. You cannot go under on Bradley Beal. And so, therefore, he goes off the pick almost every time. He goes off the pick 87% of the time. They've only gone under on, someone's only gone under on him, I think, 19 times all year, according to Synergy Sports. And he's pretty deadly when he goes off the pick. And as we talked about, that runner stuff that he's able to do is just remarkable. And so it'll be, he's probably as good as anyone in the league in that area on the runner, and it will be interesting to see whether or not the Jazz are able to handle it. His left side pick and roll is 1.24 points per pick and roll. His right side pick and roll is 0.9. So he would much rather play left side pick and roll. More often than not, he does. But most of his pick and rolls are high pick and rolls. And he's pretty deadly off either one of them because he's great. But if he goes left side pick and roll, he's even better. Thomas Bryant has been a little bit of a surprise for these guys as an energy bug. And their best pick and roll that they have with Bradley Beal is actually with Jeff Green or Bobby Portis. Thomas Bryant is not as good. So that will be interesting to see is if they run most of the pick and rolls now with Thomas Bryant. But Bradley Beal is better with both Jeff Green and Bobby Portis than he is with Thomas Bryant. See if they do something of that nature tonight and see if that impacts the Jazz at all. That is Locked On Jazz today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors, Iron Gate, Slow the Flow, Homie, and the rest. It is Locked On Jazz. Have a great day.